All right, Dan, into hour number three. Welcome back, or good morning, or good afternoon. I am Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. I'm coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. I'll tell you how dramatic that Kentucky Derby was. So dramatic that I'm talking about it on Tuesday when it was run on Saturday, and I just did a segment on it, and I need to jump the next segment to finish the thought on it. That's how dramatic that was. And to give you an example, like this guy, Rome, I don't watch horse racing, but that call from Larry Kalmus on how Rich Strike comes from basically last place to win gives me goosebumps every time. I watch that over and over again. And I appreciate that. That's, you know, instead of going with your stupid, typical Sarah Jessica Parker reset, no names mentioned, G off in Lincoln, and a number of you other idiots. Just have an open mind. Like that guy said, I don't even care about horse racing. But this was my point. Even if you don't care about it and go out of your way not to see it, you can't watch that and not tell me that's cool as hell. You can't watch that and not tell me you got goosebumps from that. I'm in it. And I don't know those people, and I'm getting goosebumps on Tuesday, and I've watched it 10 times. And Larry Kalmus is one of the best to ever do it. He called Ms. Direction winning her second Breeders' Cup race, and that I hit him after he did it. I'm like, dude, you are the best. That gave me absolute goosebumps. So that thing is amazing. Amazing. Now, a lot of you have said, great take, Rome. Great take. Get to the part about the horse biting the pony. Why did the horse do that? What was that all about? All right, so this is just my opinion and speculation on my part. And there are just certain things I know about horses. And even being in the business, there are certain things that I do not know about horses. Now, there's a lot of things I don't know about horses. There's a hell of a lot of things I wish I'd known before I got into the game that I now know. Here's one thing. They're thoroughbreds. They're bred to run. They're bred to compete. They're equine athletes. So this is what they're brought up to do. Run and win. Now, that said, their personalities are different. They're all different. They're like actual regular athletes. Some are laid back, and some are absolutely cold-blooded and assassins. And they know, and they take it personally. And I've been around all kinds. And, you know, it's not even a matter of gender. Like, we had that famous mare, Ms. Direction. And Ms. Direction was a sprinter on the grass. She was as mean. I mean, mean, mean. Like, we all adored her and loved her, but we're all terrified of her. She was mean. She was never in a good mood. And if you got anywhere near her, she was coming for you. And she bit all of us at one point or another, except those who knew better. And she was meaner than any colt I had ever been around. Meaner than any of the guys. But some of the horses are like, they're pretty docile. And they're pretty laid back. And you can actually get up near them and love on them. It just really depends. But understand, they are thoroughbreds. Or some of them, it's like any athlete that once they get on the field to play or in the ring, they throw a switch. Like Gigetta. Gigetta is a mare that we own. Really sweet to be around. But when she's on the track, she knows it's business and it's go time. And she's super high strung. So what does that mean about this horse? Why did the winner of the Kentucky Derby, why was he biting on the pony? I would venture the following guess. Number one, I don't know that horse. I've never spent any time around that horse. But if I had to guess, there are a few things working here. Number one, he just won the Derby. He just ran a mile and a quarter. He knew he won. That's something I get a lot too. Do they know they win? Do they know they win? Yes, they know they win. They know they win. The horses know they win. How do I know this? Because I've seen the way they react after they win. Some of them not only know they win, be ready for this, wait for it. They pimp their win. They style their win. Like a batter admiring his work in the batter's box or dropping the bat or tossing the bat. They style their win. How do I know this? When Shared Belief, a horse that we owned in partnership, used to win, he'd prick his ears. That's not unusual. Sometimes, watch for this now, when horses hit the wire and they win, they prick their ears back because they're hyped, they're pumped, they style it. Listen to Trevor Denman talk about shared belief when he won the Santa Anita Handicap, an enormous race at Santa Anita, and did it easily. Listen to this.
What a thriller this one is. Shared belief has him, and shared belief just exuding class. Shared belief, handwritten by Mike Smith, wins with his ears pricked. Shared belief beat California Chrome.
All right, so wrong race, but same thing. He won with his ears pricked. Shared belief would always prick his ears when he won. He was styling the win. So the Derby winner comes out of that race. He knew he won. Now, he didn't know he was 80-1. He didn't know he was 80-1. He didn't know the magnitude of the win, but he knew he won. And believe me, probably knew he was running in 18th place. And ran his eyeballs out. So he's feeling himself. He's feeling himself. He's hyped up. He's amped up. He's feeling it. Okay? And then they pony him back. I don't know exactly what the track procedure is, but I think they probably pony all of the winners back. You know, it's a way to kind of get them back under control and to the winner's circle for the broadcast. Thing is, I don't think, and some of these horses, man, they're ornery. They're tough. I don't think, and I don't know that horse, but I'm going to guess that horse didn't especially like being ponied. Didn't especially like that pony. So he started kind of biting on the pony. If you watch them during normal races, they'll kind of nibble. They'll kind of nuzzle. They'll kind of, the pony's supposed to just kind of settle him down. That didn't work in that case. I don't think that horse, kind of like that, in effect, get off me. Get off me. I know where the winner's circle is. Man, leave me alone. So that horse didn't appreciate it and started to bite the horse. And then started to bite the outrider. And that's why the outrider was kind of throwing punches and like, get off me. Get off me. He was protecting himself. I don't think that he knew what he was in for. I think generally it's just, let's take our little leisurely ride back to the winner's circle. There was nothing leisurely or normal about this horse. It was a $30,000 claimer that just won the Derby. Believe me, there's something different about this horse. So he was amped up, and I think that the pony and the outrider didn't really know. This is my speculation. Didn't really know what they were signing up for. And then you've got animal rights groups and people saying, whoa, 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 whoa. What's that? What's that? That's not good. That's not good. I would imagine there were probably a few horse people that saw that and thought, damn, that's a hell of a lot of horse, man. Even after winning a mile and a quarter race the way he did, that horse is still coming for people. He still wants a piece of somebody. So I think that's what that was. It's an animal that won an enormous race, was still hyped up. How are you after any major competition or major win? It takes you a long time to come down, right? You talk to any athlete, they don't sleep the whole night after they win a game seven or they win a championship. Well, you're asking that horse to take a walk right back or a gallop right back to the winner's circle, man. He was not ready to come down yet. And then you got somebody grabbing on him. Come with me. That was the equine version of, you know who the hell I am? You know what the hell I just did? Get off me. Get off me.
You know who the hell I am?
So I don't know if that helps or not, but that's kind of what that was. That horse was full of himself and understandably so. Again, he didn't know he was 80-1, but he knew he won. Hey, man, he got pride. Pride. Lots of pride, lots of heart, lots of fire, lots of grit. Essentially, that was the equine version of tell me how my ass tastes. Scoreboard, look up at it.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
30 grand my ass. So they don't know all that. He doesn't know he's a $30,000 claimer, but he knows he won. And like I said, some of them are fierce. When I first got in, Billy Koch, who got me in from Little Red Feather, said to me, Dude, they're not pets. Like, that ain't Cody the Ragdoll legend, man. They're thoroughbreds. And some of them are mean as hell. And some of them are sweet as hell. like athletes. Some are Mike and some are laid back. So I don't know if that helps or not, but that's kind of my explanation of that. But what that horse did was amazing. And it gives hope to everybody in the business that you don't have to just be a multi-millionaire buying hundreds of horses every single year. A $30,000 claimer at a small track. Like, I've had horses run for claims. Anybody, any of you listening could have done that if you had 30 grand and got really lucky. So I'm extraordinarily happy for those folks. Amazing. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Toronto. Billy in Toronto. What's up, Billy? How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's been a long time, man. I've listened to you for ages, and it finally feels good to finally get on and have a chat with you.
You got it. What's up?
Listen, Jim, I played the horses way too long. It was a problem in my life, and thank God I stopped betting them. But, Jim, I'll play every now and then, and when the Kentucky Derby comes along, I have no problem laying down a little bit of money. Was having a real good day, Jim, and I did have I had the one horse to win the race. And Jimmy, I will tell you this: you're talking about that overhead view. Have another look at that overhead view and look at that one horse and tell me he is not the best horse in the race with the trouble he went through. And he definitely beats Rich Strike if he gets any kind of trip at all. But Jim, the reason why I'm calling is very simply put: in watching a ton of horse races, I think I know what happened, and I think it was the Bob Baffert effect, Jim. My God, this horse, first of all, in the 21 hole, he can't get into the gate. There's no horses around to bug him, but he doesn't want to go in the gate. Like you say, he's wanting to eat the other horse after he wins the race. The owner comes on, and while he's talking, he cannot look straight into the camera. He's looking down all the time. And finally, Jim, this horse has been 30 lengths behind most of the horses in this race its last two or three races. Jim, what that tells me is the medication hasn't settled in. He's not used to running it. This was, to me, a classic case of horse rage. And there's going to be no allegedly behind it. I mean, I think that this horse was juiced out of his mind. And I don't think that this horse does anything else in its next couple of races. I hope I'm wrong, because I like a long shot story just as much as anybody, Jim. But I'll tell you something. That was one funky race that I have not seen happen, and I've been to a ton of them. Jim, it was great to hear you bring on fellow Torontonian Kevin Weeks.
All right, let me jump in there, Billy. I appreciate it. All right, so what he's saying is, I've watched a lot of horse racing. I've never seen anything like that before. That horse was juiced out of his mind. I think you went, Billy, listen. It's good to hear your voice. I like talking to you about the race until you started making wild accusations like that without any documentation or any proof. Now, the point that you made about he may never run another race like that ever again might in fact be true, and it might in fact have nothing to do with what you just alleged. Horses that run like that sometimes never are the same ever again. You know, we talk about Dubai. Dubai is where the most expensive races in the world are. And we've talked about if you send a horse to Dubai, well, it's different because the trip is so challenging. It's such, we talk about shipping horses, and you never know how they're going to, quote, handle the ship. Part of the reason we ship horses is to see how they'll handle the ship. Some are super professional and it doesn't bother them. Some don't do very well with it and it kind of freaks them out and they're just not composed. So what we say about Dubai, and I've never had a horse good enough to go to Dubai except for Shared Belief, and we never had that chance, but we talk about it. Like, if you're going to go to Dubai, you better win, because oftentimes when they come back, they're never the same. The horse that won this race may not be the same because of all the energy it exerted in winning that race. It's just not responsible to just sit here and say there's no way that horse could ever do that unless he was juiced. And if you say to me, hey, Rome, if not that, then what? My response would be, it's bleeping horse racing. It's horse racing. Like, it's a crazy sport. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some really corrupt elements in horse racing. There are some really dirty aspects of horse racing. There are some parts of horse racing that I hate. that I wish I could fix. But to just say that that could only happen because a horse was out of his mind on drugs, or the reason he was biting the other horse was it was a classic example of equine rage, that's not responsible. You don't know that. You don't know that at all. California Chrome was a horse that cost like 10 grand and went on to win the Derby and the Preakness and had a look at the Belmont and won more than $12 million in earnings, in race earnings, $12 million on a horse that cost 10 grand. Like, weird things happen in that sport. Then there are other horses that cost millions of dollars that never win a race. Mind That Bird was 50-1 and cheap and won the Derby. Like, crazy things happen. Giacomo was 50-1 and won the Derby. And again, there are other horses that cost literally millions and millions of dollars that never win a stake race, never win an allowance race, never even make it to the races. It's a weird game. And I've said this before. You never, ever know where good horses come from. Let me tell you really quickly again the story of Shared Belief. Shared Belief was gelded and won a race at Golden Gate, Golden Gate Fields in Northern California, considered a smaller track. We paid a lot of money for him, hoping to get our money back, and that's it. We had no idea that we just purchased a horse that would go on to become the top-ranked thoroughbred in the world. And the people who bought that horse for our group are extremely well-versed in the industry, but you never know. This isn't like AAU basketball where you look at kids and you can talk to the kids, talk to the parents, talk to the coaches. They're horses. This just in. They don't talk. You can't really communicate with the horse otherwise, unless you're a horse whisperer. You don't know, man. Crazy things happen. So I don't know what did or didn't happen. I'm just saying it's really irresponsible to say that horse was drugged up. Now, if a positive test were to come back and you want to come in here and say, I told you so, so be it. I'm not saying that, though. I'm saying that was an amazing thing and really good for the sport. 1-800-636-8686. Horses win on long odds. We won a stake race with a horse by the name of Power Surge that was 70-1. Crazy things happen in that sport. Even that, 50-1ers have won the Derby. But only one other time has a horse with bigger odds, longer odds than 80-1 has won. And look at us talking horse racing 5 days after the fact for a half hour. Incredible. John Morosi is coming up at 40 past. If you want to talk about this or anything else, hit me up when we come back. 1-800-636-8686. Dell Technologies wants to celebrate all your hard work with these Small Business Month specials. For instance, get great value offers on powerful laptops, desktops, and servers with Windows 11 Pro starting at $499 and top monitors and docks, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. It is the perfect time to upgrade so you and your team can stay secure from anywhere. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-AS-DELL. That's 877-AS-DELL. To refresh your business tech with these Small Business Month specials, Dell recommends Windows 11 Pro for Business, 877-ASK-DELL.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
.303 Products has your number with a full line of premium protectants and cleaners. They've got everything you need to keep your car looking new for longer. For more information, call 303radio.com. You know what's really interesting is that we're still talking about the race. And that I know a number of you were disappointed when I wasn't here on Monday to talk about the race. And here we are on Tuesday, and it's now jumping into a third segment. It's going to be a short segment. But I think part of the reason for that is Derby Day has always been a big, big thing. But I would even argue that it's as big now, arguably, as it's been. I don't want to say in recent years because everything is bigger now because of the pandemic, but because gambling is more and more accessible to so many people. And then visually, And then it is an event, and it is a thing that people rally around and have parties for. And visually, it's an amazing thing to watch, right, on TV. Because it may only be 2 minutes, but the lead up to it's so amazing. You know, the pomp, the circumstance, Kentucky, the show itself leading into it's interesting. The animals are majestic, even if you don't really get it or care about it. If you watch it and you see the animals, they're beautiful. And then you have a compelling race like that. And people can bet. You're not just watching it. It's easy to bet. Like this guy writes, this horse winning the Kentucky Derby would parallel to a qualifier winning Wimbledon. I was in tears watching that happen. Tom Sharp. It's actually a pretty good analogy. It would be like a qualifier having to win 3 rounds to get into the main draw and then winning 6 matches to win the event. Rome. I'm not a horse racing fan either, but after watching the YouTube clip, damn, my favorite part is Rich Strike's Deion Sanders impersonation as he tweaked his head around and jeered at the Blue Bloods down the stretch. Dan in the PHX. That's what I'm saying. It's not that far-fetched. The best ones know. They just know. I've always said this about shared belief, and you know, this is my frame of reference. This is why when you're like, hey, Rome, why do you keep saying that? Because that's a horse we owned, and that horse was different, and it was the top-ranked thoroughbred in the entire world. But I've always said this about shared belief. He knew. He knew he was different. He knew he was special. I'm not saying they all do, but the ones, I'm talking about horses now, the ones that are really special, they know. I spent time around that horse before races, right after races, when he won. He only lost twice. When he didn't win, I saw the reaction. He knew. The goosebumps that we used to get with shared belief, not only in some of the things that he did during his races, which were just absolutely mind-blowing, but some of our favorite moments were when we took, or the groom and the horse folks that handle the horse would take the horse out into the paddock before the race. He was like a gladiator. He knew it was time. He knew it was go time. And he saw, and this was a small horse now, he saw the other horses in the paddock and them coming around in a circle before they saddled up. And he would try to intimidate the other horses. I saw it. He'd puff up and he kind of snort and you could see other horses backing up. I mean, it was like actual athletes playing mind games. So when you say this horse was pulling a Deion Sanders and jeering at the other Blue Bloods, there's something to it. They know. The best ones, in fact, know. They just do. 1-800-636-8686. Hey, Rome, that kook Scott in Toronto is nothing more than conspiracy theorist with regards to his take to the Derby. Regards, Kyrie. Hey, listen. Horse racing's had a lot of bad elements and a lot of bad things. And I'm not saying that's the worst take I've ever heard because of the sport. Hey, Rome, that last caller knows nothing. You can't just accuse a horse of being drugged up. Maybe he was dealing with a herp outbreak like I had before my last fight. Yours, the MMA fighter going viral from his viral. Jake in NYC. That was something I meant to get to today. That is an incredible story. Alvin, do you at least have the sound for that?
Last fight, I was tired. I was exhausted. I'm about to launch this NFT that's going to change the fight game. And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight. I had herpes before that fight, 2 outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I fight.
Wait, what? Did Joel Bauman just say that he was exhausted? He had pulled 30 all-nighters. He had an NFT that was going to change the fight game. Oh, and he had a couple of herp outbreaks leading up to the fight. Did he say that?
And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight. I had herpes before that fight, 2 outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I fight.
All right, bro. I don't want to be splitting hairs. I'm not saying that you're not healthy. I'm choosing my words very carefully here. I had 2 herpes outbreaks in the week before the fight, but I'm healthy. Let's go.
I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I fight.
All right. I don't know because I'm not well-versed, and I want to be so careful in how I talk about things when I'm not well-versed. But technically, is it accurate to say you had two outbreaks, or do you not just have an outbreak?
I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Like, would an outbreak not suggest that it was an outbreak? Okay. If you have two outbreaks, does that not suggest that you had an outbreak and then you were fine and it cleared up? But then you had another outbreak?
I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here.
Tough week, I guess. That's all I can say. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't have the herp. I don't know. I'm not judging him or anybody else. I'm just trying to understand. I don't have the herp. I don't have the clap. I don't have crabs. I don't know. All I know is I've never heard an athlete, and I'm guessing he's not the only athlete. Just like I'm guessing, hell, I mean, half my staff probably does. Alvin, you don't. You're careful. You're careful. You're just free and easy. Anyway, I mean, credit to him for saying, do you know what I've gone through? Let me tell you, 30 all-nighters, I'm dropping an unbelievable NFT that's going to change the entire game, and not one, but two outbreaks of herpes. Respect, my brother.
Brother.
I mean, that doesn't go away, and apparently you hit it at the worst possible time, but you know what? My man played through it, clearly. That is some kind of soundbite.
I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week.
How about the crowd cheering him on, too? Like, bro, we had no idea. Hell, that wins even more impressive than we thought.
I'll fight.
Hell yeah. Because I'm sure that a percentage of them has, like, been there, still there, know exactly what you're dealing with, bro.
And I put in 30 all-nighters.
I mean, hell, man. I had an outbreak this week, and I barely even got to the fight to watch. And I'm not the one that climbed into the octagon. And you had two outbreaks. You're a legend.
I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks.
I mean, two different parts of the body? One from the mat, one from sex? I don't know. Who knows? Above and below the belt? Bad timing. I had gonorrhea, syphilis, the clap, the crab, the herp. I still kicked his ass, man. I still messed him up. I'm a bad man. You are, dude. Oh, my NFT dropped, too. And 30 all-nighters. Let me tell you about this dude. That horse didn't accomplish jack compared to what this guy did. That is incredible. Hey, yo, homeboy in Toronto, how come you're not accusing him of being on drugs? Other than the antibiotics. Anyway, just messing around. That was an amazing post-fight interview. All the props in the world for that. I thought Michael Chandler got loose. When we come back, John Morosi will help me class this thing back up. Hey, you want to be in the Smack-Off?
You got to play your way in.
Smack-Off 28 on Friday, June 24th. If you're not going to be in it, you're probably going to listen to it, and if you're going to... So really quickly, this guy makes a point that I made earlier, just to reiterate. He writes, quote, "The fractions of the Derby were pretty much unheard of, and I've been watching for almost 60 years. Signed, Walt, Pony Guy since 1966. Still in Miami Beach." It's true. They were absolutely flying up front. Crazy fractions. Sizzling. All right, as promised, we're joined right now by an MLB Network insider, an NHL Network insider, analyst, NBC Sports, friend of the program. John Morosi is going to be on the call for the Yankees at White Sox this Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on MLB Network, as well as many other things, as you know. John, welcome back. Good to have you. How are you?
Jim, my friend, love talking with you any time of year.
but especially this one. NHL playoffs, MLB season rolling. Thanks, as always, for the invitation to be on the show today.
My brother, you ripped it from me. I was going to say it's always great to talk to you, but especially this time of year, we have baseball, we have hockey. But, John, why don't we focus on baseball for the most part? As we sit here this morning, John, the Angels are in first place in the AL West. I bring this up because you and I have talked for so long about how important it is for Mike Trout and MLB that the Angels get to the postseason. So what do you make of the way they've started off this year?
Jim, I believe they're going back to the dance for the first time since 2014, the way they're playing right now. And a couple of key things to point out. Number one, you compare last year's rotation to this year's rotation. Of the first five starters to start ball games for the Angels last year, only one is still in the rotation right now, and his name is Shohei Ohtani. 80% of the rotation is different, and those changes, by and large, have been for the better. Noah Syndergaard, Michael Lorenzen, Reed Detmers has come in, and Patrick Sandoval, who I believe is one of the more underrated pitchers in the American League right now. They've given this team a foundation and a rhythm. They're backed up by, I believe, one of the best closers in the world in Raisel Iglesias. And then offensively, it's not just Trout and Ohtani. Rendon had a huge game over the weekend against his former team. And Taylor Ward. I love the story of Taylor Ward. It really just it shares with us what the journey of a top prospect can be, because he was a first-round pick out of Fresno State as a catcher, Jim. Then he moves to the infield. He's still trying to find his way. Now he becomes an outfielder playing alongside Mike Trout. And basically his numbers have been as good as Mike Trout in 2022. And my favorite other note about Taylor Ward, Jim, is that his wife's name is Taylor as well. Taylor Ward and Taylor Ward.
Only John Morosi. John, seriously, about Taylor Ward, when you lay it out like that, and I knew that story, but I'm not sure everybody did, it is one of the crazier things I've ever heard in Major League Baseball. For him to be drafted in the first round as a catcher, go to the infield, go to the outfield, and him breaking out the way he is absolutely amazing. One thought about Shohei. He struck out 11, John, at Fenway Park. Last night, he hit two home runs, including his first Grand Slam, career Grand Slam. Not bad for a guy who was in an alleged hitting slump. Is there a point in time, or are we there right now, where we just run out of words to describe or things to say about him? I mean, what are your thoughts on what you've seen from him this year?
Jim, the word is still, for me, singular. There is no one else in the world like Shohei Ohtani. Never has been, probably never will be. He is doing the two-way thing at a higher level than even Babe Ruth did. I'll make that clear. Ohtani is better at this, doing it concurrently, the collective impact, than what Ruth was. There has been no one like him when you combine the power-hitting prowess plus the swing-and-miss stuff, as you point out. I still believe, based on his outing at Fenway last week, that was the most swings and misses, I believe, still to this point, of any starting pitcher in Major League Baseball this year. And, of course, he did it on the mound at Fenway, same ballpark, where Ruth was doing it a century ago. The layers of the history here are just incredible, Jim. It really defies explanation other than to say we are being treated to something that no baseball fans in the world have ever seen before. And I think you have to give credit, and Tom Verducci made a great point on this in our broadcast last week, to his manager in Japan originally with the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, Hideki Kuriyama, who basically emboldened him to try to do both, to not restrict himself to be only a pitcher or only a hitter. And what a great gift that's been to all of us who love the game, but especially the Angels and their fans who now lead the American League West.
Well, that is the truth, John. Absolutely, especially to the Angels and their fans. John Morosi is joining us. John, speaking of Fenway, what about the Red Sox? When they beat the Blue Jays on April 9th, or I should say 19th, they were 6-5. They've gone 4-14 since then. What has happened to this team?
A couple things, Jim. Number one, the situational hitting and the lineup depth have not been there. Trevor Story has taken him a while to get adjusted to Fenway, which is understandable. New father, new team, new position at second base, a lot of newness there for him. So I don't think he can be blamed too much for that. But the pitching side of things, really they're missing Chris Sale in the rotation. They've had to move Garrett Whitlock into the rotation now on a full-time basis. And the bullpen, they've lost so many games, Jim, late on, whether it's extra innings, one-run games, one run here or there. They have just been very, very inconsistent. And, Jim, to me, the staggering part of all of this is where this could be going is the possibility of Xander Bogaerts being traded at the deadline. Because when you consider where the Red Sox are right now, it's not just how poorly they're playing, Jim, it's the quality of teams ahead of them. And if you cannot count on the Yankees, Rays, Blue Jays all getting cold at the same time, which you probably can't, you need to look to the future. And if you're that far apart on signing Xander Bogaerts long-term, Jim, the very stark reality is that for a homegrown star who has won multiple World Series with the Boston Red Sox, this could be Xander Bogaerts' final season in Boston.
And wouldn't that be a gut punch? John Morosi is joining us. John, speaking of the Yankees, you're going to be on the call of the Yankees at the White Sox on Thursday. The Yankees right now have the best record in baseball. Let me ask you this. Is that a function of them being the best team in baseball right now, or is that more about them getting a chance to feast on some weak teams early in the season?
You know, Jim, it's a great question. I do think the latter has had a lot to do with it, where they've played the Orioles a bunch early on in the season, where I don't think the Jays have played them yet. So I really believe there is a bit of a disconnect there in terms of the strength of schedule. That being said, the Yankees have taken this opportunity to get themselves with a lot of momentum now. Yes, they were able to beat up on Texas over the weekend, and Nestor Cortes Jr. nearly threw the no-hitter. But they have developed, I believe, a really strong foundation. Aaron Judge, I always love it, Jim, when the narrative comes out about a player of, oh, he turns down the contract extension. Is he going to be distracted? Doesn't look that way to me. He's playing as well as he ever has. And I think Anthony Rizzo has really looked good. That, to me, was one of the most important signings of any team. They didn't even have to go out and spend trillions of dollars to get Anthony Rizzo back in. I think it was a very manageable deal for the Yankees. He brings that left-handed power that they desperately needed. So when you think about the way Judge is playing, Rizzo having DJ LeMahieu healthy, and this rotation, Gerrit Cole slowly rounding into form. And I mentioned Cortes, his pitchability. I love this time, Jim, in the game where we talk so much about velocity and everybody in the draft is trying to throw 100 miles an hour. Well, Nestor Cortes Jr. does not do that, and he almost threw a no-hitter in the major leagues yesterday. We should all remember the example of what Cortes is doing right now.
John Morosi joining us. John, one quick thought before I let you go. We got to talk some hockey. Toronto wins the opener in their series 5-0. Then they lose 5-3. Then they win 5-2. Then they lose 7-3. You know this sport so well. You know that town really well. If Toronto does not get out of the first round, never mind the cup, but if they don't get out of the first round this year, how big of a gut punch would that be to them and their fans?
Well, Jim, they've gotten so close so many times, and you're right. We can go through all of the different teams in American sports and the panic level that they have when they struggle in the playoffs. You could mention the Dallas Cowboys, the Lakers, the Yankees. No city does panic in the playoffs quite like Toronto with the Maple Leafs. They really don't. And, of course, we know they have not advanced past the first round since 2004. Nearly two decades ago, they've come so close to Game 7 disappointment. That's why Game 5 tonight, Jim, is so huge. I know you had the great Kevin Weeks on the show today as well. I'm looking for John Tavares to really put his stamp on this series in a huge way. Of course, last year he was injured in the first round of the playoffs. They lost in seven games to their rivals, the Montreal Canadiens. So whether it's Tavares, whether it's Austin Matthews, your stars have to be your best players. Goaltending has been a challenge for them. Again, consistency there, but I really believe their stars step up front. They'll find a way to beat the defending Cup champions, and my goodness, what a scene it's going to be. Toronto, all the pressure on them. They've got Mark Giordano to give them some calmness in the back line. Jim, I think it's going to be one of my favorite sporting events of the entire year. Will be Game 5 tonight, Leafs and Lightning.
What an unbelievable description of what that's going to be like. Game 5, Leafs and Lightning. I cannot wait for that. Nobody like this guy. An MLB Network insider, NHL Network as well, NBC Sports as well. Good friend of the program. And remember, John will be on the call for the Yankees and the White Sox this Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern on MLB Network. Nobody can do multiple sports like John Morosi. John, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Jim, you are the best in the business, my friend, and thanks for always for the kind of introduction and the invitation, and always love our conversation. Thanks so much.
Nothing but respect, my man. So much respect and admiration for you, John. John Morosi, really, there is nobody like him. There are guys that do what they do and do it very, very well. He essentially is like the Ohtani of analysts. I mean, this guy can break down baseball as well as anybody, and he can break down hockey as well as anybody, and he breaks them both down. He's like the Shohei of analysts. John Morosi. Great respect and admiration for him, and shows up with the same energy every single time. Never has a bad day. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and an experienced staff at over 250 local branches. You want to call or click Grainger.com or stop on by in case you're joining us late. Once again, I did miss yesterday, but not because I gave myself a day off. I had jury duty. That's done. My thanks to John Morosi, Kevin Weeks, and Will Brinson. Jim Rome podcast tomorrow. Hall of Famer Tracy McGrady. I've not spoken to him in a long time. Looking forward to it. And a beef segment tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. See you. We're out.